Hello and welcome to part four, the great conclusion of our preseason preview pod series for this year's Atlantic 10 basketball season. It's going to be a great year, and when you guys are listening to this, we will be right on the precipice of Duquesne taking on Princeton to open up a great slate of A-10 games.
Yeah, it's just been a long summer and fall, but we're finally almost here. And the first couple episodes of our preview, we were pretty objectively looking at these teams, just giving you a breakdown. But this time, we're going a little bit deeper. We're giving some preseason all-conference teams and our preseason standings. So a little bit more opinion-based. I don't know about you, Tyler, but I'm ready to hurt some feelings and give some hot takes. But yeah, just super excited for the season to start. At the time we're recording this, it's just about 2 days until the games tip off. And the scrimmages have been nice, but it's time for some real basketball, and I can't wait.
I can't wait to put A10 Twitter up in arms about a certain team not being in last place.
Yeah, well, I can tell you right now, that's quickly turned into one of the biggest memes of the conference. And that might get an interesting reaction, because plenty of times we've seen that certain team picked last, and apparently that's still too high, according to some people. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how that reaction goes.
They're not the least talented team in this conference. I can't believe I'm saying this, because I thought they were going to be terrible this year. But the more I look at it, the more I realize, like, I'm not completely disgusted by their roster.
Well, I guess we should probably just get right into the rankings. Should we just start at the bottom and go from 14 to 1? That's not how I was planning on it, but it seems like we're kind of heading that direction.
Yeah, why not? We started off all of our preseason pods with the three teams that I'm sure we'll both have in the top three. So let's start at the bottom. I split my conference into four tiers. I think most people would actually split it into three, and that's how I was going to do it for the most part. But there was a little bit of a gap that I didn't originally expect. I don't know how you would split up your group, but I have five teams in my bottom tier.
I'd actually just say four teams in mine. I can split mine into tiers, though. That works for me. I'll do four tiers. So do you want to read off your bottom tier?
Yeah, so this is my teams worried about Wednesday in Brooklyn tier. Only if these end up being the five, only one of them will be able to secure a bye into Thursday night. And so in reverse order, I have the St. Joe's Hawks at 14, the George Washington Colonials at 13, the perennial bottom dweller Fordham Rams with a big boost up to 12, the UMass Minutemen at 11, and the LaSalle Explorers at 10.
All right, that's pretty similar to mine, although there is one team I am much higher on. I would say my bottom tier is actually only four teams. I've got Fordham still dead last at 14. I tried not to pick them there. I really didn't want to, but I just looked at their roster. They bring back plenty of guys, which is nice, but I don't think any of them are as big of a star as Nick Honor was, so I sold them 14. St. Joe's at 13, LaSalle at 12, and UMass at 11. So that's my bottom tier. I think everyone else is at least a step up from there.
Yeah, so one of the rationales for me keeping Fordham out of the bottom, I guess we'll start with them somehow. We'll let them lead an episode for the first and only time this season. I just really think Jalen Cobb's going to go up a notch. He's somebody that was a candidate for my old Dark Horse team that we will discuss later. He didn't make the roster, but I think that now that there's no question that it's his team, he's going to have to be their leader, and there's no sharing with Nick Honor anymore. I think he's going to go up a notch.
Yeah, that's fair. He put up some pretty good numbers last year. It's so hard with the reputation Fordham has. Picking them anywhere above 14th is just tough for me. And I actually think St. Joe's, even though they have the least amount of depth already this year, I wasn't ready to pick them last just because I think Ryan Daly is going to be way better than anybody for Fordham. And I also think they have some higher upside guys like Miles Douglas and Taylor Funk. So I could definitely see St. Joe's just crashing and burning and being one of the worst teams in the country, but I also think they have a much better chance than Fordham at actually being decent this year. So I just went for the higher upside there. That was my mindset.
With St. Joe's, I think the depth's just going to be awful, both in terms of lack of experience and just literally a lack of players and bodies on the bench. The Taylor Funk thing, I think he's going to jump back up, but I don't trust that it's going to happen after how disappointing he was last year. Miles Douglas could be a nice X factor. I don't know what to think of their freshmen, but while they probably do have a higher upside given Daly's talent level, I kind of went the other way and thought, well, if Ryan Daly isn't a star, then they're going to struggle to even get to 3 or 4 wins in conference play.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair point. It's kind of dangerous when a good team is reliant on one player, but this is a case where a really bad team is going to be reliant on one player. So that's fair. If he doesn't pan out, St. Joe's is, they're going to be awful. They might be bad even if he is a great player, but I don't know. I'm hoping their freshman class comes in and does some big things. It's, who knows what to expect at this point. They're definitely going to need one or two of those freshmen to step up because they really only return 3 guys and then bring in 2 transfers, so it's just a thin roster already, and it's only November. Not something the Hawks aren't used to dealing with, though. And then, so I guess we should just talk about another team in our bottom tier that's reliant on freshmen. That's going to be UMass. I put them at 11th. I think they're another team with kind of high upside, just because they did have the number one recruiting class in the conference. But history kind of tells us that teams loaded up with freshmen don't do that great in the A-10. I think next year could be big for the Minutemen, but even if Trey Mitchell and some of their other young guys can have a big year, I don't see them doing any better than middle of the pack. Just they lost way too much from a team that already wasn't that great to begin with.
So this is where I made my bet on the ceiling pick. And part of it being that Carl Pierre has shown us now throughout his 2 years there that he is going to single-handedly win them 2 to 3 games in A-10 play where he just absolutely goes off. Now, the flip side, obviously, of having Carl Pierre is he's going to completely blow 2 games for you with just a horrific shooting night where he just keeps trying and trying. But he's one of the biggest high-ceiling, low-floor guys in the whole conference. It's basically him and Fats Russell in a category amongst themselves. And when you have a guy that talented in the bottom tier that you know can take over games, I think that elevates your floor a little bit too. And so now if Trey Mitchell or TJ Weeks or even one of the older young guys like Cy Chapman turns out to be a nice find, then they should be able to pretty easily get to 5, 6, 7 wins in conference play.
Yeah, it's hard to predict how that's going to go, but I do think it's an exciting team, and if things click, if Matt McCall can get things turned around, I could see them in the middle of the pack, but it's a tough road ahead. And then, I guess for the last team in my tier, I had LaSalle at 12. They were just not a very good team to begin with, and they lost their best player in Pookie Powell. They're another team I could see having some success in the future since they bring in a couple talented freshmen and transfers. I just don't see who's going to be the star on that team, even though they do have some great 3-point shooters. I think it's going to be another rebuilding year, though, for them.
Yeah, I'm basically betting that they'll somehow figure out the point guard spot, which we have noted is going to be a giant issue for them. And other than that, I'm betting on Ashley Howard, who I really believe is the star up-and-coming coach in this league. And I'm betting on their big guys to just pound everybody on the boards. That's really what I'm going for. I think they're going to be a very, very consistent team, much the opposite of UMass and St. Joe's and Fordham. I think we're going to understand pretty early on in the season who LaSalle is. They're just going to be a bully ball team with a good coach. And I think that consistency can carry them to, if not a bye out of the first day, at least being favored in those games.
Yeah, and the coaches picked them to get 10th, so they were the highest out of these teams that we've talked about so far. And they managed to avoid playing on Wednesday last year, too, so Hopefully Howard can keep that going. I agree. I think he is going to be a good coach for them down the road. So did you have anybody else in this tier, or are we ready to move on? And also, how many did you say, three or four tiers for yours?
I had four tiers. Okay. And I also had GW in here, but we'll cover them with the middle then.
Okay. So I guess I'll move on to my third tier of the A-10. So I have three teams here, and this is actually going to be my most probably controversial pick. So at 10th, I have George Mason, 9th, GW, and 8th, St. Louis. So these teams, I don't think any of them are contenders, but I could definitely see them in the upper middle of the pack area. But I also think they each have a weakness that is going to keep them from the top.
So I went a little bit broader with my tier, and I considered this the just middle of the pack tier. The teams that I don't think any of them are bad enough to slip into the Wednesday conversation. Now, the exception with that one is if Mason struggles with injuries, they very well could be down there. But I also don't see any of them potentially making a run to win the conference or maybe even get into the NCAA tournament discussion. I think that this is the group that last year would have finished in the 3, 4, 5 slots. But given that the conference is better, these are the guys that I think are somewhere on the edge of NIT contention for the season. And so my group, George Mason at 9, Duquesne at 8, St. Bonaventure at 7, and SLU at 6.
So I guess the first team I want to talk about, I picked GW 9th, which is probably way higher than everyone else, except for GW fans. They were picked 12th by the coaches at Media Day. I just see them as a team, even though they had a rough year last year, they bring back quite a few key pieces. They get back Arnoldo Toro, who I think could be a big difference maker. He only played about 6 or 7 games, but he's a guy that could average a double-double. I think Maceo Jack has a chance to step up. He's their leading returning scorer. And the same for Justin Mazzulla. He was their starting point guard last year. I think he could expand his game, and he also just has a lot more experience than a lot of these other kind of bottom teams. And then I think one thing we have to point out, Jameer Nelson Jr. just put up 20 points in their scrimmage. Now, who knows what that means? It might mean nothing. But just with his pedigree and that type of game already in his college career, I just think that's really exciting for GW. So when you bring in a freshman like that, plus some other decent returning pieces, I actually think they could avoid the playing on Wednesday falling into the bottom four. And I'm also excited about Jamie and Christian as their new coach. He's been a winner everywhere he's gone. And I think this is the year for the Colonials to turn things around.
I think next year is the year for the Colonials to turn it around. I don't trust their bench. I don't trust their wings. I just think that a team like LaSalle is just going to be more consistent than them. And the more I think about it, the more I probably have them too low at 13. Because I actually really like Justin Mazzulla this year. I think Longarica is going to be a better player with more minutes. But I just think that they're more so than anybody, even including St. Joe's. I think that they're the team that's going to be really vulnerable to just getting crushed 5 minutes into a game and not being able to turn it back on. I think that's going to be a common theme for GW this season.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I realize picking them at 9 is pretty aggressive, but I just feel like if there's one team from the bottom that could take that step up into the middle of the pack, that's my pick. So I guess we should talk about the other George, which would be Mason. I actually picked them 10th behind GW. I'm just really concerned. Well, two things. Justin Kier still hurt. They're reevaluating his foot injury in the next couple weeks, but that's a big issue if he's not ready to go right away. And then I just don't know how they're going to replace Otis Livingston, because he's a guy that was basically their point guard over 30 minutes a game each of the last 4 years. So that's tough to just suddenly find someone else to take on that important role. And with those two issues, I'm just not that optimistic about the Patriots.
So the question I wanted to raise to you, we both have them in 10th.
Well, you have a 9th, right? What has to happen? I thought.
Yeah. I have 9th.
9th, 10th doesn't matter.
I've screwed that up twice now. What has to happen for them to get into, say, the top six? Because I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I think it's just got to be somebody's got to step up at point guard, first of all. Maybe that can be Jamal Hartwell. I think he actually had a big game. I have to double check, but in their scrimmage, I think he was one of their leading scorers. I'm also just not sure. They have some okay post guys, but none of them are huge offensive threats. Like guys like Greg Calixt, AJ Wilson. I think AJ Wilson in particular is a great defender, and he could be a guy that could maybe lead the conference in blocks, but he's never proven to be a reliable scorer. So I would say those are the two things. They need a point guard that can distribute and facilitate the offense, and then they need some guys that can score in the post.
Yeah, I struggle to see where they're going to get points from besides Kyer, Hartwell, and Jordan Miller. And yeah. I don't love reading the Kyer injury updates.
No, it doesn't
really
sound
this
good.
Really feels like something that it is going to be a much longer story than it should be, even to the point that it seems possible that maybe they just shut him down if this doesn't go well. Because if this injury ends up taking him through the full non-conference, it might actually make sense for them to just slap a red shirt on him. And
yeah,
we don't have any proof that that's going to happen. But the updates have just not been positive. And if I was a Mason fan, I'd be really fearful about how much he's actually going to be able to play this year.
Yeah, the updates don't sound good. I don't want to speculate anything because, I mean, all we know is what we see in the news. But the fact that he's far and away their best player and he's already injured is not a good sign. Also, they lose Ian Boyd out for the year. He was one of their other returning seniors. I just think that's going to hurt him quite a bit. And I know Livingston didn't have maybe his best season at George Mason, but losing him is just a killer for these guys. And I have them at 10th. I could definitely see them higher than that, but I don't see them as a contender this year, unfortunately.
I just think that we saw their offense bogged down so many times in A-10 play last year, and that was with Livingston and with the post-up game of Jared Reuter. And so now you take those guys out, and unless we're I don't even think if one guy takes a huge step off offensively, it'll be enough. So unless we're missing two giant breakouts on the offensive end, I think this team's in a lot of trouble on that side of the ball.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I guess the one other team I had in this tier was St. Louis. I had them coming in at 8th. That's just kind of the same thing I said earlier. This conference isn't super kind to teams that rely on freshmen. And it's kind of been a trend, too. It's not a knock on SLU because they had a great season last year. But you look at the last couple years, Dayton graduated a great class and then slipped to 9th place. The same thing happened to Rhodey after they won the A-10. They slipped to 8th place. And the thing with SLU, they were not as good as either that Dayton or Rhode Island team that got 7 seeds in the tournament. I mean, they had a fine season, but they were 13 seed and got 6th in the A-10. So I honestly could see them falling even lower than 8th. I think they have a lot of talent, and they brought in a good recruiting class. But losing Javon Bess and Tremaine Isabel, those were their main sources of outside offense. Without those guys, their shooting could take another huge step back.
Yeah, I have them at the top of this tier, which is larger than yours. I have them at 6. And one of the biggest reasons is I'm making a huge bet on Jordan Goodwin becoming their point guard, boosting up his 3-point percentage, and becoming one of the true stars of this conference. So that's point number one for me. Goodwin is my top breakout guy for this season. And then number two, all those teams that you mentioned, a lot of them saw huge stepbacks in defense, including VCU, which obviously is not a normal thing for the Rams. I think that SLU is going to be able to keep their defense in the upper echelon of the A-10 just because they have Goodwin, French, and Fred Thatch all coming back. And while we have no idea what to expect from their freshmen, these are some very athletic guys. And I think Travis Ford's going to be able to drill the defensive fundamentals into them early. So I'm betting on SLU's defense. And for me, I think this tier could go any which way, basically the same to me. And all of them have different flaws. I just think that SLU's a little bit better equipped to overcome their flaws.
Yeah, I agree with your point on their defense. I think it could still be one of the best, especially with Hassan French. He might be the best. Well, I don't want to say the best because there's some other good ones in the A-10, but he's one of the best defensive centers in the conference. Their offense was so ugly last year, and that was with Bezant Isabel. It could be one of the worst in the A-10, unless some of their freshmen step up and can hit an outside shot, because it's not starting from a great point, and they lose a lot of talent that can score the ball, so I just don't think they're going to be able to overcome that offense, even though their defense should still be at least above average in the conference.
So you want to give your second tier?
Yeah, sure. So my second tier will kick off with Duquesne at 7, Richmond at 6, Rhode Island at 5, and then St. Bonaventure at 4.
So I had the Bonnies and Duquesne both slightly lower. My second tier is the teams that could potentially surprise somebody and become NCAA tournament contenders. I have Rhodey at 5 and Richmond at 4.
So I guess I'm surprised. So wait, where did you have Duquesne?
I have Duquesne 8, and it is solely because I am terrified that they're not going to be able to figure out the wing spots. The Frankie Hughes injury knocked them down 2 spots for me. I had them 6 before I found out about that.
I am shocked. Like, never in a million years would I think that I would have Duquesne ahead of you. That's kind of funny. But I can't understand the concerns. I guess we can just start with them. And we got a little bit of information because they played a very good West Virginia team in their scrimmage, which they hung close. They lost by 8 on the road. I think one of the biggest concerns is the same from last year. They did not do a good job on the glass. West Virginia got a ton of second chance points, and that really was the difference, I thought. Although I will say Sincere Carey against a team with an excellent press, I thought he did a great job finding his teammates and getting them open shots. He's going to be one of the keys for sure, but that rebounding was just not the best effort for the Dukes, and if they can't fix that, I don't know if they can rise above the middle of the pack.
Yeah, and so I do want to note that while this is what I came up with for the podcast, I've gone over 5 through 8 in different orders so many times, and this is just what I settled on right now. If I went back and did this again tomorrow morning, then those 4 teams could very well be shuffled for me again. I think Duquesne and the Bonnies both probably have higher ceilings than what I'm considering right now, and Rhodey and SLU both have lower floors than what I might be considering right now. And a lot of people go against me on Rhode Island for that. I think Rhodey could very well be in danger of slipping into like the 6 or 7 range. I don't think that they will, but if I sat here and tried to redo my rankings again, I can't guarantee that I would have them up at 5, nor can I guarantee that I would have Duquesne as low as 8. So I think those 4 can really be shuffled around a lot.
These teams are very close. The way I saw this tier, so I had them 4 through 7, I think they're all teams with a realistic shot at winning the conference, although I think they're just a significant step behind the top 3. But this 4 through 7 range, any one of them could sneak into the top 4 of the conference. And there's a good chance almost definitely at least one of these teams, maybe 2, will get that double bye. So that is, I think, one of the interesting storylines, this group of teams here, that they're above average. I think each of them improved from last year. Maybe not the Bonnies, I guess, but I think they're still going to be pretty good. But each of these teams, I do think, will contend in the A-10 tournament.
Yeah, I think any of the 5 between Richmond, Rhodey, SLU, Bonaventure, and Duquesne could all very well end up with the 4 seed. And that group of 5, I think it's best to call them the potential bid thieves, because we know how this conference works. And if the top 3 are really going to secure at-large bids like we think they might, then We know none of them are winning the conference tournament. So I think any of these five have a chance to make the NCAA tournament when you just remember the fact that those 4, 5, and 6 seeds in the A-10 tend to do a lot more damage in March than in any other conference.
Yeah, no, I agree. I definitely think any one of them have that potential to go on a run, which that's going to be exciting at the end of the year. So I had St. Bonaventure in my 4 spot. You had them at 7, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
I'm going to be honest. I kind of think they're 6 now. I've talked myself into them being above SLU, but
we just have no idea until the season starts. You just never know.
Yeah, I'm changing it. I'm changing this during the pod. SLU, the Bonnie's up to 6, SLU down to 7. It's Kyle Lofton, Asuna Shunahi, and Mark Schmidt.
It's the Mark Schmidt factor. That was honestly, I'll tell you this right now. So I made these rankings initially a week ago, and for the longest time I had Rhode Island 4 and St. Bonaventure 5. And then this morning, actually, I came up with the conclusion to switch them. I had two reasons. One is the Mark Schmidt factor. This man will just not lose in the A-10. We've talked about this enough. And then two, Rhode Island has probably the toughest A-10 schedule since they have home and homes with VCU, Dayton, and Davidson. St. Bonaventure plays each of those teams once. Plus, they get Rhode Island at the Riley Center. That is just such a huge scheduling advantage for the Bonnies. And I think there's a good chance these teams could end up tied or within a game of each other. But since the Bonnies get Rhode Island at their home, I think there's a good chance that they would hold a tiebreaker if there is a tie. So that was how I ended up switching them, although I do think the Bonnies and Rhode Island are very close.
So I think Rhode Island's not quite as good as everybody else thinks, but we'll talk about them in a little bit. As for the Bonnies, we covered in depth in our preview pods for anyone who either listened or wants to go back and listen, all the various guys who could be difference makers as the role players on this team, because it's basically just Lofton, Ashunahi, and Dom Welch back. I think Lofton's going to take a big step up this year. I'm not going to give what team I have him on because we're going to talk about that in a few minutes here, but I actually think he's being underrated by the rest of the A-10 media. I think he's one of the 10 best players in this conference, or at least will be come January. They're never going to have to worry about their defense with Ashunahi. But I just don't see the crazy high ceiling for this team. And unless one of their new guys turns out to be a star, then I think they're kind of just stuck in the 5-6-7 range. And even if their role guys stink, Schmidt and those 3 sophomores will keep them from going any lower.
I just think, for me, it is kind of hard to project the Bonnies because they do lose Stockard and Griffin, and they're bringing in a ton of new guys. But the big 3 that we mentioned, Lofton, Asunahi, and Welch, I'm very high on all of them. I think they're going to be great. Plus, they bring back a reliable backup center, or potentially a starter, in Amadi Ekpeazi. All it's going to take, I think, is for 2 or 3 of these newcomers for the Bonnies to step up, because Schmidt basically only plays 6 or 7 guys anyway. It's not like he's going to need a 9 or 10-man rotation to have success in the A-10. And they have a couple solid transfers. The one coming to my mind right now is Bobby Planudas from Mount St. Mary's, who is one of the best 3-point shooters in the country his 1 year there. I think he could really improve their shooting for a team that kind of needs that. And then from there, it's only going to take 1 or 2 other guys. They also, I can't remember who off the top of my head, I think it was Vasquez that had 20 points in their scrimmage. So maybe he's a freshman that can step up too, but I don't think they're going to need a ton of reinforcements from the new guys just because they don't play a deep rotation anyway. So I just feel like with that and Schmidt's coaching, they're a good bet to finish in the 4 or 5 spot.
My mind just goes back to the fact that they were basically an average team last year without Griffin and a significantly below average team without him and Stockard. Now, those games came a little earlier in the year, and so obviously the young trio is much better than they were at that time. But if they had to go without Griffin and Stockard all of last season, they would have finished like 12th or 13th. And so I don't think that the young guys have – I don't think that there's a way for the young guys to have grown enough to push them into a confident top four spot.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that Stockard was the one guy on the first team that is no longer in the conference. So that is a big hit to the Bonnies. I'm just hoping for their sake that one of their new guys can sort of fill his role. Although that is tough to lose Stockard. And they were not good at the beginning of the season without him. So I think that honestly is what keeps them from being one of the top three contenders in the A-10. So you had Richmond in your four spot, right?
Yeah.
And I have them sixth. I guess I'll just say at the beginning of the offseason, I saw them as a team that could potentially contend. I think offensively, they are going to be fantastic. I think all five of their starters can score and just do a lot on offense. This is one of the big concerns we had was their rebounding. And of course, as we record this shortly after their exhibition game against a D3 opponent, they got out-rebounded by one. Rebounding and defense, I think Richmond's very weak in both those aspects, and I don't think their offense is going to be quite enough to take them into the top four. Unless, if they can improve that part of their game, they are a true contender, but that's just been an issue for them in the past, and so far it's not looking great after one exhibition game.
Yeah, I'm not going to overthink that. As my rankings have fluidly changed over the last few months, one thing has stayed the same. I've had Richmond in the four spot since the end of last season. I just really think that this is the year for them to finally come back to the top. I think Jacob Gilliard proved that he can be the best player on a team last year, and it's just going to only keep getting better. Grant Golden is what he is. He's a walking double-double machine. I think that the rebounding from him is going to be better this year. And we saw so many different games last year where those two were enough to just keep them in it. And now you add all this talent around them, whether it's getting Nick Sherrod back from his injury, whether it's Nathan Kao continuing to grow, whether it's Blake Francis coming in as a transfer. And I think that they have a depth of top-end talent that no one else outside the top three has. I would put their starting five up against anyone else that we've talked about so far. And now they actually have a real bench for the first time in years.
I would agree with you. I think their starting lineup is definitely the best out of the teams we've covered so far. I'm not as confident in their bench. I think they have a couple guys like Jake Wojcik and Solomon Caressi that could help out. But still, and I guess you could add Andre Gustafsson too. That's eight guys, but still, I mean, Caressi and Gustafsson didn't do a whole lot last year, and unless one of them really improves, I still think their bench is going to be one of the weaker ones in the conference. Although I do agree, I mean, all five of their starters, something Mooney talked about on Media Day, he's starting five juniors. This is one of his best classes he's had at Richmond. If those guys can just connect on the court, that could be one of the best starting lineups, but after that, I do think there is a drop-off for the Spiders.
Well, for me too, while Chris Mooney has been not a great recruiter, especially in terms of depth over the past few years, I still think that he's one of the top half in-game coaches in this league. And I think that that's going to matter this season. I believe in Chris Mooney, unlike a lot of other people in this conference.
Did you see that Richmond actually released a real billboard advertising their team? And they just got ripped a new one on Twitter for that. I think it's going in the same spot.
I wanted to know if that was the same billboard.
It might be the same location.
Was that the same billboard in which the we know I-95 gets a lot of Richmond Spider fan traffic.
I could not believe it. Like, that's a bold statement. I mean, putting up the billboard's fine, but then putting a statement out about that on Twitter, that's something that could blow up in their face. Although I do appreciate it. I mean, that shows they have faith in their coach, which is something you need as a program. So I don't know. I don't think Mooney's as bad as people say. I think that's way overblown, but still, that's just I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, so continuing on with this tier, you had Duquesne higher than I did.
Yeah.
And I just the Williams thing kind of threw me off for a while there. And now to find out that they don't have Frankie Hughes this year, their wing depth consists of Lamar Norman and a bunch of freshmen. Now, there's going to be ways to counter that. And I'm specifically talking wings, the 2 and 3. I think they're covered down low, and they're definitely covered at point guard. Now, we're going to see a ton of Sincere Carey and Tavian Dunn-Martin on the court at the same time now, which works great offensively, is not the best defensively because you're going to have two undersized guys there, especially when you have Lamar Norman playing the three with them, not exactly going to be a big team on the perimeter. Now, one thing that we didn't expect was that Austin Rotroff was going to play in their preseason game the other night. He tore his ACL in January. And so basically, all math said about the single best case scenario for him to return. I didn't expect that. Standard recovery would have kept him out until December or January. But if he's there, that now gives them the flexibility to play bigger and put Marcus Weathers at the three. But I just don't know. I think that there's going to be a lot of question marks over there. And given how poorly their three-point shooting was last year and how badly their three-point shooting defense was last year, I just don't think that they can afford to kind of not know what they have at those major positions.
Yeah, I share some of those same concerns. I basically just put them ahead of SLU because I'm even less confident in the Billikens, and I just don't think such a young team is going to do better than Duquesne, since they do bring back a lot. But the Frankie Hughes injury does put a lot more pressure on guys like Lamar Norman, Maceo Austin, their freshman, who actually started, by the way, and wasn't bad. He had 6 points. I think he's a guy that could maybe be one of their breakout guys now that Hughes is out. I just think the biggest issue, I thought, I talked about their rebounding earlier. I have their box score up now. So Michael Hughes and Bailey Steele each had double-digit rebounds. Their wings and guards just didn't rebound at all. Like, I see Lamar Norman, 1 rebound. Maceo Austin, 0 rebounds. Marcus Weathers only had 1 rebound, although he only got in for 12 minutes. And then another one of their freshman guards, Evan Buckley, just 1 rebound. I think those guys, I mean, they're going to have to step up more now that Frankie Hughes is out, but I think some of them are going to have to pick it up on rebounding because Michael Hughes and Bailey Steele can't do it all by themselves, as we saw in the West Virginia game.
Yeah, and last year, the perimeter guys who rebounded were Williams and Frankie Hughes.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to have some
rebounding
like Williams,
was an issue so. Last season with those two.
Yeah. So they're going to have to improve that. I mean, Eric Williams isn't walking through that door anymore. And he was one of the best rebounding wings in the conference, maybe the best one. So that's a big weakness. I do think their shooting could be good, though. With Tavian Dunmartin hit a couple threes in the game, he looked good. I think Maceo Austin could be a good shooter. And then Sincere Carey, I think he was great as a freshman last year. I think he should be more healthy this year. And I just think he's going to have a big season, so I don't think their rebound. I think their rebounding weakness might keep them from being a top team, but I think they do enough other things well where they can still be in the middle of the pack. So that's why I had them 7th. I don't think they're quite a contender yet, but it could be a different conversation next year because a lot of them will be back.
Yeah, and so then the last team in the, and you know what? I went a little negative on Duquesne there. I will say having them at 8th. I think that's their absolute floor. I don't see them going any lower, barring another injury. Your carry is ready for the next step. And I think that's a theme across a lot of guys in this middle tier, whether it's him or Lofton or Jordan Goodwin. I think that he's one of those guys who's just going to ascend into a different level of stardom this year. And if that level is higher up than what I'm thinking right now, then this prediction is going to look really stupid.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm super excited to see what he can do. He was great as a freshman in a conference with a lot of good freshman point guards, and I think he's gonna be a star, hopefully, for the next couple of years for them if he can stay healthy, because that was kind of an issue last year, but he was able to play through it. If he is feeling better this year with his knee, there's no reason why he can't be one of the top players in this conference. So I guess moving on, the last team we even talked about, Rhode Island, I had them fifth. A lot of people, including the A10 coaches, had them fourth. They've kind of been that sneaky pick to get an at-large bid, and I still think they could do that. But we got some bad news last week as two of their players are ineligible. Antoine Walker will miss the first semester as his transfer waiver was not approved. And then Jeremy Shepard, it seems like that's due to academic reasons. I guess some of his credits maybe didn't transfer over, but he is ineligible for the entire season. So Rhode Island still brings back a very solid starting lineup, but that is going to hurt their depth a little bit.
Why does everybody think that this is like a prime NCAA at-large candidate team? I don't get it. And I'm fine with being the one to drive this bus. I think that they're massively overrated. Now, granted, I have them in fifth when everybody else has them in fourth, but it seems like everyone has a top four, whereas I want to draw this sharp line of it being a top three. I think the talk of them potentially being better than Dayton or Davidson is lunacy. Like, this team was not good for 3.5 months last year. It's basically the same team now that Shepard and Walker aren't going to be playing at the beginning of the year. And I think everybody just got brainwashed by a 2.5 week stretch where they were really awesome, where Fats Russell was great, Fats Russell. And I feel like no one remembers that they were bad, except for all of the George Mason's fans who apparently have some giant vendetta against Fats.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some concerns. They were just an awful 3-point shooting teams, or one of the worst 3-point shooting teams we've seen. Something I think we do have to talk about, though, they had more impressive wins than pretty much anybody in the conference not named VCU. And to be fair, that's because VCU can't beat themselves. But Rhode Island beat VCU on a neutral court and at home. They won at UD Arena. And then they beat an okay West Virginia team at a neutral court by 13. That's something that pretty much no one else in the A10 could have said last year. And I think that just shows that they have a high ceiling. Now, they did go on a terrible stretch where they lost 7 of 8 starting in late January. And that was ugly. They lost to Fordham at home during that period. But they just finished the season so strong. They really elevated their game at the end. And I think the reason I'm pretty optimistic for them, I just think their core of Jeff Dowden, Cyril Langevin, Fats Russell, and I'm even going to throw Tyrese Martin in there. I think those four guys are just about on the level of any other team's top four players. Now, I'm not quite as confident on the rest of their team, but I do think if they can turn around some of their shooting woes, it could be a sneaky good year for the Rams. Although I will admit there were some weaknesses last year that kind of prevented them from moving to that next level.
I just think we got to be very careful about overrating that stretch to end the year. Yes, they beat VCU in Dayton. VCU didn't have Marcus Evans in that game. And I'm sure you remember it. That Dayton game, while it was impressive to go into UD Arena on a Friday night and knock out a Flyers team that might have still been on the bubble at the time, Dayton just shot themselves in the foot like 19 times in that game. I honestly think that that was the worst executed game by a non-bottom four team in the conference last year. Like, there were some horrible coaching decisions. There were some horrible on-the-court decisions. And yet, if Trey Landers didn't have a really bad shoulder and had tipped that ball in, Dayton would have won anyway. Like, that was just an incredibly ugly game on both sides. And Rhode Island basically just made less mistakes than Dayton did. So I'm not going to get all hopped up about them winning that game.
Yeah, that was also when Fats just went unconscious and he had 23 points that game. That was, I don't want to talk about that game anymore. That was a bad night. But one other thing, just before we move on to the top tier, and I want to keep this moving, but the NCAA just made a garbage ruling for Antoine Walker. I don't understand how, in the spirit of Halloween, the NCAA hands out these waivers like candy. All these transfers just get to play immediately. And then every once in a while, it's just a coin flip, and Rhode Island flipped to tails, so Antoine Walker doesn't get to play. I just don't understand how the NCAA comes up with this stuff. I mean, this is a rant for a different day, but I think they've got to take the subjectivity out of it. Either everybody sits a year or nobody sits a year. Because these rulings just make no sense. I mean, you have guys like, I know there's a Kentucky transfer that's playing immediately for Washington. And basically it's because Calipari wrote him a good letter of recommendation. Like, he basically told the NCAA, like, yeah, he's a good guy, I'm going to let him play. I mean, I don't understand it. That made me upset. And that's even as a Dayton fan that gets Chase Johnson. We get him immediately. So I'm biased here. I mean, it worked out for Dayton, but I hate how that ended for Rhode Island. And Walker's going to miss some of their key non-conference games. The good news is it's only half a year, so it's only about 8 or 9 games until the second semester starts. But, man, that's a tough break for Rhode Island, and I do not like how the NCAA handled that.
Yeah, John Rothstein beat me to that tweet. I would just get rid of the waivers.
Yeah.
Either everybody's eligible or nobody's eligible. Like, there's no difference between the Chase Johnson and Antoine Walker cases. And honestly, even if you're going to keep the waivers, this should not be decided on Halloween. We're less than a week out from the season. Like, this all should have been taken care of in June. But it's just our always constant reminder that any one of us listening to this anybody who's listening to this podcast right now, you could run the NCAA better than it's being run.
Yeah,
that's just a shame. Our constant reminder of that.
Yeah.
And so moving along to the top tier, we both have the same three. I'm interested to see if we have the same order. So, to me, this is a very clear top three. I did not have many quandaries about this order. Davidson at 3, Dayton at 2, VCU at 1.
Yep, I agree. It hurts me to pick VCU ahead of Dayton. It really does, but they were picked number 1 by the media for a good reason. I mean, they bring back pretty much everybody from a team that was far and away the best in the A-10. And I just think Dayton has so much more depth than Davidson. And I know Davidson might be better at the top with John Axel and Kellen Grady, but Dayton's studs aren't too far behind. So with the added depth, that was my reasoning for picking UD number 2.
So for me, it's added depth. It's the extra volatility of the ceiling of all the transfers. I mean, this year's Davidson team is basically just last year's Davidson team. And these two were even pretty much the whole year. Now Dayton adds in all these guys from E.B. Watson to Rodney Chapman to Chase Johnson to Jordy. And part of the thought process when you get this high up to the top is, how are these two teams going to match up against each other? Davidson's strength is all their shooters along the wings. And as we talked about in the team previews, I think that Dayton has the perimeter defenders to take care of that. Whereas Dayton can run out a front line of Obi paired with, it could be Trey Landers, it could be Chase Johnson, it could be Jordy. And what does Davidson have? They have Luca, a bunch of question marks, and Keyshawn Pritchett, who's basically just a small forward playing power forward because they don't have any other options there. And I think that we could be headed into where we were with last year's game, where Luca's going to just spend all game trying to stay out of foul trouble. And unless one of their centers becomes better than we expect, then we're just going to be watching the second half of the first half with Obi Toppin just dunking on a bunch of 6'6 guys.
Yeah, I definitely don't know if Davidson can stop Obi. All I want to say, I just went to Dayton's exhibition against Cedarville, a 33-point win, and I just think Dayton, this is the deepest team they've had since the Elite Eight run in 2014. They have enough talent to make it to the tournament this year, and I think we're at a point where it's fair to expect that from Dayton, and I think anything less than a tournament would be disappointing, because they, last year they had the talent and they didn't have the depth. This year they have both. They have so many different lineups you can throw out there. I mean, they put Ibby Watson on the bench to start the game, and he ended up leading with 17 points. I think that just shows, I mean, he didn't even start, and he had a great game, and Dayton's still able to put two other guards in Rodney Chapman and Jalen Crutcher in ahead of him, and it's not even like that crazy of a decision because those guys are both so great. Now, it's hard to draw too many conclusions from an exhibition game against a Division III school, but the newcomers were all really impressive to me, and I think expectations should be high after a kind of disappointing end to last season.
Yeah, I agree, and in the end, both of these teams have one of the key elite players in this conference with John Axel and Obi. They both have another stud guard with Crutcher and Kellen Grady. And I mean, really, I've given my analysis for this. For me, I want to move on a little bit to VCU. I don't know how much it's worth talking about them. They're the champs. All their key guys are back. And so for me, they deserve this spot until someone comes and takes it from them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think VCU, I actually saw an article that came out about them today, and it said something about how the headline was that the VCU was, they were the best team in the A-10 last year, and they bring everybody back. And I was like, that's mean to Sean Mobley, but okay. They do lose one or two guys, but all their top guys are returning. I think Marcus Evans is one of the best players in this conference now that he's going to be fully healthy, hopefully. And just their defense was so elite last year. I think they're definitely the safest pick for the top of the conference. And I think you said it, until somebody knocks them off, I think you have to give them that respect at number one.
So we'll take with that. I mean, unless you have anything to add with any of those teams, I think it's time to go into our preseason all-conference team predictions.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. So I guess should probably just, well, first I want to say, before we get into our first, second, and third teams, for some reason the A-10 decided to put six guys on these teams, which is a technical foul by the rules of basketball. You can't do that. We're only putting five because that's what you're supposed to do, from my understanding. I don't know if there's anything you want to add, but
there's five guys on a basketball court.
Yeah, I mean, one of my best memories of that is GW getting a technical foul against Dayton. Like, gosh, that was like 10 years ago for having six guys on the court. And yeah, I don't know why the A-10 did that, but we're not. So anyway, I'll start with my first team. Let's just read these real quick and then we can give a couple quick thoughts. So I want to say I was actually disappointed. I feel kind of bad picking each of the four guys that are returning from the first team, but I just didn't have a good argument against any of them. But it's Marcus Evans from VCU, Kellen Grady and John Axel from Davidson, Obi Toppin from Dayton, and then my fifth pick was Jacob Gilliard from Richmond.
Okay, so we do have one different here. For me, the three obvious, Obi Toppin, John Axel Goodmanson, Marcus Evans, they are the three best players in this conference until further announcement. They were the stars last year. They're the stars again now. For me, then, the next one went to Cyril Langevin of Rhode Island, who I had on my first team last year. I think that behind Obi, he's easily the second most complete big man in a conference that is suddenly full of a lot of them. And then the final spot for me was tough. Gilliard was the runner-up. I went with Kellen Grady just because of the top-end upside. And I really think that he's going to return to the guy we saw his freshman year now that he's healthy. And start to emerge into the player that was a possible first-round pick 12 months ago.
I'm actually going to give you a hot take real quick before we move on. I think Kelvin Grady's going to be the best player for Davidson this year. I think he was a little bit disappointing last year, despite making the first team, which sounds crazy to say he was disappointing, but I think his shooting numbers are going to go up. I think he'll be more comfortable in a bigger role this year, and I think he's going to show people why he had that first-round hype. Not to say John Axel won't have a good year, because I think he will too, but I think Grady is, out of these five guys on the first team, I think he might have the most potential to improve this year.
That's a warm take. I mean, him and Obi are still the two most talented guys in the conference. So.
Yeah, I'd agree. And also, I guess real quick, while we're on it, I don't know if you've selected this at all. Do you have any idea who you would pick for preseason player of the year, if you had to guess?
No, I didn't take that one. I think I'd probably go with Marcus Evans, just on the simple fact of he's going to be the best player on the best team. And as I said during our VCU preview, I think that their offense will be improved to the point this year that he can really start to get his efficiency numbers back up.
Yeah, that's actually basically exactly what I was thinking. I would pick Marcus Evans at this point, both because, well, I think he's going to be healthier this year because he's another year removed from his Achilles injuries. And yeah, I just think he's going to be the best guy on the best team. So that's where I would go at this point, but doesn't really mean anything in November. So I guess for the second team, I had Kyle Lofton from St. Bonaventure, Jordan Goodwin from SLU, Grant Golden from Richmond, and then I had Cyril Langevin and Jeff Dowden from Rhode Island.
So two of mine matched yours, Kyle Lofton, who was the last guy that I slipped onto this team. And by the way, this was actually very competitive.
Yeah.
I feel like there's probably about 14 guys that had a true argument for the top two teams, but went with Lofton along with Jordan Goodwin. I've seen a lot of second team hype for Jordan Goodwin. I'm disappointed by that because I wanted to just stake my claim on that island, and I didn't realize that there were already people there buying real estate. But Goodwin on my second team, Jacob Gilliard, who you had on your first team. And then two differences, a pair of guys getting promoted from the third team from last year. Jalen Crutcher of Dayton and Marcus Santos Silva of VCU.
Yeah, I think those are pretty good picks. I mean, I think the second and third team, the first team was pretty clear cut for me, at least the top four. The second and third team, though, is a lot more blurred between those two groups. I do agree. I think Goodwin, in particular, is going to take a huge jump just because he's going to be... He already fills up the stat sheet with points, rebounds, and assists. But I think he's going to do that even more so this year now that they lose Javon Bess. And I'm thinking this could be a John Axel situation where we were both high on him last year and he ended up being player of the year. I could definitely see Jordan Goodwin making a run at the first team. He might be held back because SLU won't be as good as Davidson was last year. At least I don't think they will be. But I'm expecting some big things from him, and I think there's a good reason to be excited about what he could do.
Absolutely. Like I said, I'm staking my claim on Jordan Goodwin Island. I think he's going to be an absolute superstar this year. I think that the shots are going to start falling. And then the two guys that I had different from you, Crutcher and Santos Silva, I mentioned in the VCU preview that I think Marcus Santos Silva is going to take another step up offensively to kind of help take some of that load off of Marcus Evans. Crutcher will forever just be the star of the underappreciated in this conference. People just don't realize how good and how important he is. And the thing that stood out for me in picking these first two teams, the top 10 guys in the conference, it felt appropriate to have two Dayton, two VCU, and two Davidson guys on these teams because I think that those three are just going to be so much better than the rest.
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with that. So I guess we'll just move on to the third team. Marcus Santos Silva and Jalen Crutcher were actually my first two guys on the third team. So if we were doing six guys like the A-10 media, then I guess they would have technically been on the second team. But I had those two. Sincere carry for Duquesne, Deriante Jenkins from VCU, and then Ibby Watson, the Dayton transfer, rounding out my third team.
So real quick, apologies to all of the guys that I will mention on my Dark Horse team, along with Carl Pierre and the toughest cut, Justin Kier, who I just didn't feel good about putting on this team, given that we have no proof in believing that he's going to be 100% this year. And so for me, guys that you had on your second team that I had on my third team, Grant Golden and Jeff Doughton. I also had Sincere Carey on this team. And then the two guys I had that you didn't, Asunahi from Bonaventure and Hassan French from SLU, the two king rim protectors of the conference.
I wanted to pick those two guys, and they were two of the four that were picked by the A-10 that I didn't. I just think defensively they're both great. I'm not sure they're going to do enough offensively to make those teams. Although I think French might be the one that I'm mostly wrong about. He was picked by the second team, or picked on the second team by the A-10 coaches. So if he can improve his offense, he's got a really high ceiling. And the same for Osun. I just don't know if those guys are going to score enough to get the attention to make it to the conference teams, although they were close. And then I guess I'll just add the other two guys that I did not include that were picked by the A-10 media and coaches. I left off Justin Kier basically for the same reasons you said, just we're not confident about his health. And I'm also just kind of doubling down on my bet that George Mason won't be that good. And then I left off Fats Russell, who was picked on the third team by the A-10. I just can't pick someone that shot like in the low 20s in three-point percentage. I think he's going to improve on that, but he's got to show me something first, because last year wasn't his best shooting performance.
Yeah, we've given Fats too much time in these previews. If you want to hear our takes on him, go listen to episode one of our preseason preview, because we talked about him a lot already.
Yeah.
So the all-defense team, this is the only other one in which we both did it. I went back and looked. Four guys that I had on my all-defensive team last year are still back, and so I just went ahead and slid all of them onto this year's team. Sincere Carey, Asunahi, Jordan Goodwin, VCU's Isaac Van, and then I gave the new open spot to Van's teammate, Deriante Jenkins.
Okay, we actually had a couple differences here. So I had Osunahi and Isaac Van. And then my last three I gave to Hassan French. I think he might actually be him or Osunahi, I think, are the best defensive centers. Then I also took Cyril Langevin and Jacob Gilliard, who I believe led the A-10 in steals last year. And I think he's going to be the one bright spot defensively for a Richmond team that I don't expect to play much defense.
Yeah, and so for me, while I completely ignored positions on the all-conference teams, for all defense, I actually kind of thought about it from the standpoint of if you're actually putting together a defense on the floor. And so that's the big reason why Hassan French didn't make it. I gave that center spot to Asunahi. And then part of it for me is if VCU is going to have the best defense in the conference, they should have at least two guys on the team. Certainly not zero like last year. At one point, I almost considered just making my old defensive team just the five VCU starters.
Yeah, you could. And, yeah, it would make sense.
And like on the preseason team, they have Marcus Evans. And while he's a nice defender, I think that that's just a star power thing. All five of the guys on the team are stars. I think that the key to that VCU defense is the wings, and it's Isaac Van and Deriante Jenkins.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Evans isn't really the first guy I think of when it comes to defense for VCU, although he is very good. I think you could also have a good argument for Marcus Santos Silva. It's just I already put three centers on this list, so I couldn't really go any more than that. So it's tough. I mean, I think four of my guys are actually returning from the actual all-defense team, which is kind of a cop-out, but I just feel like at this point in the year, that's kind of harder to project than the others. So I guess we also have, well, we did it a little bit differently, but we have a breakout team. Do you want to go first with yours?
I'll let you do yours, because then you can, then I'll jump in and you can close out with your old rookie squad, which I do not have.
Okay, so my breakout team, these are just five guys that were good last year, but I expect to turn into potential stars. I have Dominic Welch from St. Bonaventure, Tyrese Martin from Rhode Island, Fred Thatch from SLU, Maceo Jack from GW, and Cy Chapman from UMass. So these are just guys that I think they're either going to get more minutes this year or just have bigger roles in general. And they're the types of guys that maybe didn't get a ton of attention last year, but I think have a chance to make an all-conference team either this year or in the future.
So I did mine a little differently. I did an all-dark horse team. And so the perspective for this for me is everyone on my three all-conference teams are guys who are already established stars in this conference. And so I wanted to look at the five different categories of guys who could potentially be on that team later in the year. So category one, transfers that we haven't seen in the conference yet. Honorable mention to Ryan Daly. It's E.B. Watson. We've raved about him a lot. We've heard plenty of other people rave about him. It seems like he's poised to form a Dayton Big Three with Obi and Jalen Crutcher. And if he can do that and they finish top two in the league, he's going to have a big shot, a good shot at an all-conference team. Category two, freshmen, Terrence Hargrove, Yuri Collins, Maceo Austin, I think are some of the potential big breakout freshmen. But for me, I'm going with Trey Mitchell. If he can really step it up and be the best player on UMass and they avoid Wednesday, he'll have a chance. Category three, guys who are kind of like top two players on their teams now who could become true stars. And for this one, I went with Justin Mazzulla. I actually think that he has a chance to, a really true chance to make the third team if GW can finish ninth like you have them predict.
They will finish ninth.
Category four, guys who are role players on really good teams who could potentially become stars for them. I almost gave this to Luka Brejkovic, but I'm not sure if the foul trouble is still going to be a problem or not. So I went with Dominic Welch of St. Bonaventure, who I think really grew as a player every month as the year went on. And then more in the spirit of your team, just a flat-out breakout guy. I have plenty of them, but the guy that I think among role players has a chance to be the biggest breakout star in this conference, Jamal Hartwell of George Mason, who I think will at least fill in admirably for Otis Livingston, even if he's not quite as good.
Yeah, I think that's a good list. I feel bad. You put a lot of work into your breakout team, but I guess that's because I also did a rookie team based on pretty much absolutely nothing, but I'm still going to do this anyway. I have Trey Mitchell for UMass. He's basically the most hyped freshman, and I think he's going to start from day one. Nashawn Hyland from VCU, probably the second most hyped up freshman. I was a little bit questionable about adding him because I didn't know if he'd get enough minutes, but he's performed very well in both their intra-team scrimmage and their exhibition game, so I think he'll have a big role, even as a freshman. Jameer Nelson Jr., partly because of his name and also just because he had a huge exhibition game. Maceo Austin for Duquesne, just because I think he's got the best chance or one of the best chances to step up on the wing for the Dukes as a freshman. And then Kyle Rose, because what would a freshman team be without picking a Fordham guy? And he started in their exhibition game and played pretty well. So you have to pick a Fordham guy. I feel like they send someone to the all-rookie team every year.
Yeah, even though a lot of people disagreed with that last season.
Yeah, true. That was kind of controversial, but it still happened, and it's going to happen again this year. All right, so I guess we'll just wrap this up real quick. We have a couple over-unders. Some of these are kind of serious, some of them are fun, but let's just run through these real quick because we're running out of time. I guess let's start with a serious one. Actually, this one's not very serious. Well, it's so debatable.
First off, I want to know how many do you have?
I have like 7 or 8, but some of them aren't very good. It depends.
Okay, I have 6, so we'll rapid fire through these, and if you want to give an explanation on one or two of them, then go ahead. But I'll let you start off.
All right. We'll start with a fun one. SLU's free throw percentage, over under 64%. And for reference, they just went 10 for 21 in their exhibition game.
It's going to be under. I think the rims are made of stone at Chaffetz. And they're going to have to rely on Hassan French a lot more offensively this year, and he still can't shoot foul shots. So,
yeah, they lose their two best free throw shooters, so I'm going to say under also. All right, you can go.
So one of the most intriguing teams, I think, at the bottom of the conference, UMass, over under 5.5 A-10 wins.
I'm going to say over. I think they probably go 6-12 or 7-11. What do you think for that one?
I take them over. I think that that's the line between 12th and 13th, basically.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Over under 18.5 for the highest AP ranking that an A10 team reaches. So right now, VCU starts out at 25, but this could be any team. Will somebody do better than 18.5?
I actually don't know how to properly do this because of the numbers, but I'm going to say that they will have somebody better than that, mainly because I think VCU is going to beat LSU in their own building during the second week, and I think they're going to have a great chance to get into the top 20 in mid to late November.
Yeah, I agree. I think over just because they have an easy schedule until the LSU game, and if they win that, they should be better than 18th or 19th.
So next one for me, total A10 epitomes of brutality, over under 6.5. Last year, I think we had 12.
Oh my God. I'm going to say over. I don't know. That's something I'd have to look and think about, but 6.5, like I could definitely see UMass or like St. Joe's each having a couple. So I'm going to say over. All right. Let's go with NCAA tournament games one between the whole conference, over under 1.5. And first four games count for this, by the way.
Over, because when we inevitably have a bid thief, it'll lead to probably either Tatum or Davidson ending up in the first four, and they should win that. I think VCU is a legitimate second weekend team.
Yeah, I think over for that one, too. I think VCU should win at least one game, hopefully. And then between Dayton or Davidson or a potential bid thief, I think we can get one more. We had two tournament wins in 2018 when Rhode Island and St. Bonaventure won a game. So it wasn't that long ago that it happened.
So Ed Crosswell of LaSalle last year averaged 7 rebounds in just 19 minutes a game. Those minutes should go up exponentially last year. And meanwhile, one of the funnest stat chasings in the conference was Cyril Langevin. Could he get to double-digit rebounds? He didn't. He ended up with 9.9. And so with those two being the prime candidates, over under 10 rebounds for the A-10's leading rebounder.
That's a good question. I'm going to say under, just because I think Langevin is going to have more help since Rhode Island's going to have more depth. So I don't think he'll quite get there. Crosswell's got a shot if he gets more minutes, but I don't think he's going to get there either. So I'll say under. What do you think for that one?
I think Crosswell's going to do it.
He could. His efficiency rebounding was great, so I think he might have the best chance, to be honest. All right. Highest scoring game for an individual player in the A-10, 36.5. And for reference, at the end of last year, we had three guys, Fats Russell, Tremaine Isabel, and Eric Williams, all score at least 39. So I'm just setting it at 36.5, a little bit more conservative. And if so, if you think it's going to go over, who do you think it could be?
Over, and it's going to be one of the Davidson guys, or Fats.
Yeah, I think I'll go over too, because that's just a fun one. That it would be boring to bet the under for that, and I'll say Fats says it again.
So that rolls almost perfectly into my next one. Kellen Grady and John Axel Goodmanson, combined points per game next year, over under 37.5. For reference, last year they combined for 34.2.
I'm going to say under. I was thinking over, but when you told me that was their number last year, I think they might each go up by about a point a game. But if Davidson truly is trying to play a deeper rotation, that's what McKillop says. I don't know if he will. And I'm sure those guys won't come out much anyway, but I don't see them picking up 3 points. I'll say under. But that's a close one. What do you think for that one?
I'll take the over. I think one of them's going to get to 20 this year.
Yeah, it could happen. All right. This one's a little bit tougher to measure, but I watch every Dayton game, so it shouldn't be a problem. Anthony Grant, technical fouls, 1.5.
Under.
I'm going to say under also, although he does have 3 in the last 2 years, so I think 1.5 is a good number. I'm thinking he's not going to have any reason to yell because Dayton's just going to be so good, so he'll be calm on the bench. No technical fouls this year, but I wouldn't mind seeing 1 or 2.
So I have one here, and then my last one I'll leave for the very last of the segment. So after this, you can finish yours out.
Okay.
Last year, Davidson led the conference in three-point shooting, finishing 126th in the nation. Now, in order to have finished in the top 50, your team would have needed to go 37.1% from three. And so over under, the A-10 three-point shooting percentage team leader, 37.1%.
Honestly, I think LaSalle could do it, if anybody, because they bring back a couple really good shooters, but I'm going to say under. I don't think anybody's going to be top 50. All right, so this one's going to take a little bit of time to explain, because it turns out they didn't have as many bye games as I thought, and a lot of them are just crappy home and homes. Over under home games lost by Richmond in the non-conference at 1.5. And I'll read you their non-conference schedule because it's not good. St. Francis, Pennsylvania, Vanderbilt, who sucks, by the way, Cal State Northridge, McNeese State, Boston College, South Alabama, and probably the best team on this list, Charleston. So over under 1.5 losses out of those 7 games.
We've seen St. Francis PA beat A-10 teams in their building before. I'm not going to say which one, but that one has basically stopped playing NEC teams to avoid embarrassment. I'm going to take the over because odds are they'll lose to either Cal State Northridge or Charleston, given that they're both actually pretty good teams. And then Richmond's good for at least one just unbelievable, horrible epitome of brutality loss.
I mean, they opened the season with a loss against Longwood last year. They just, I don't know what it is. They have some great moments, but every year they just have a couple huge letdowns. So I'm going to say over. I hate to, but I could just see it happening. Some of these, like, I can already see the Rothstein tweet in my mind. The epitome of brutality. Richmond loses a bye game against McNeese State, and that's, oh. That's going to suck, but it's going to happen. All right, I'll let you do your last one. I think that's all I have.
Over under 23.5 beefs between key members of A-10 Twitter this year. Now, we know Tori from VCU is good for at least 6 of these, and Blackburn is good for at least another 3. So that's 9 right there. Can we get to 23.5? And if so, which fan base has to get pissed off for it to happen?
I mean, I'm going to say over. I mean, it's probably got to be either Davidson isn't quite as active on Twitter compared to the other top teams. So I'm going to say it's all the top schools with a big presence on social media. I'd say VCU and Dayton, and I'd throw the Bonnies in there too. But I don't know. That could be an interesting one, though. What do you think?
If Fats drops 30 on George Mason, I think we're going to blow past this number.
Yeah, they would not be happy about that.
Because they're all going to lose their mind if that happens.
Same with, I'm pretty sure a lot of the UMass fans hate Travis Ford, so if Slew beats them, we could see some fireworks. But that'd be a good one. Well, I guess all right,
we'll see how good UMass is at that point.
Yeah.
As we've seen with their football team, if their basketball team is bad, then those guys will just kind of half emotionally check out, but keep watching anyway.
All right. Well, before we wrap this up, one more question. Who makes it to the tournament from the A10 this year? How many bids are we getting? Putting
We're
you on the
back.
spot here. What?
We're back. Our title will stand this season. There are three NCAA tournament true caliber teams in this league. I think VCU is going to be a lock by early to mid-February. I think one of the two between Dayton and Davidson won't be far behind, and the other one will skate along the bubble all season until they take the bid in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I think we're gonna get three. I think VCU is gonna be back as an at-large, hopefully in the like 6 or 7 seed range. Dayton should make it. They have the talent. And then I think Davidson is gonna do just enough. And I wouldn't be that surprised to see someone like Rhode Island steal a bid. But I'm not gonna get that aggressive with a prediction. I'm gonna stick with three bids, which honestly, I'm just hoping that happens because I'm gonna feel like a fool for naming this the three bid league. If both years that we've done this so far, it hasn't happened. So I'd just be happy with three. We don't need to do any more than that yet.
But by the way, even if we get four, then it averages out to three a
That's
year. So
true.
I
That's
think
a good
we're good.
point. I wouldn't mind seeing four. It could be, I mean, Rhode Island's gotten some hype. I saw a Mid-Major Madness article that about half the panelists that made picks had them as an at-large. So it's not just us. I mean, it's other mid-major fans that think the A10 is a chance to make some noise in March. But I will say this before we wrap it up. Last year was rough for the A10, and it got ugly in the non-conference. And we were very lucky to get two teams to the dance. This year really should be a lot better. I mean, mo just about every team returns a lot of talent, and I think anything less than three bids for the conference would be kind of disappointing, to be honest. All right, well, anything else
Yeah.
before we wrap it up?
No, I'm extremely excited for this year, and I think we got some great games coming up in the first weekend that are going to be big time measuring sticks.
Yeah, this first Tuesday has like seven games all at 7 or 7:30 on ESPN Plus. We're gonna need like an NFL Red Zone channel to cover all that. I don't even think ESPN Plus has a split screen feature, so that's going to be annoying. But yeah, a lot of games this week. We have a couple big ones too that we'll be tweeting about, and hopefully the A10 gets off to a good start because last year in the very first week we already suffered some brutality, and I don't want to see that again. At least not right away. With that being said, thank you for listening to our preseason podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter all season long for A10 content at 3BidLeaguePod. That's on Twitter, and you can also email us at 3BidLeague@gmail.com. So, thanks again for listening, and enjoy the start of the season.
St. Joseph season comes down to this. Miles, that's a three. Fans, the Richmond Spiders are Sweet 16 bound. Denham Brown for three. No good. By George, the dream is alive.